Podcast Impulse. Hello and welcome to this breaking news episode of What Most People Think. And there is, I mean, some weeks I think like, oh, I hope there's enough news to talk about. And I think, does it warrant it, an extra episode? But this week, not a problem, man. We go back to Rachel Reeves' morning. Well, on Tuesday, Rachel Reeves took a shit in your cornflakes as she basically teased future pain in the budget, but didn't tell us what it was going to be. She woke us all up early. I mean, I cannot believe how badly executed this was. It's literally like someone's woke up you up early and went, quick, everybody, come downstairs. I've got something to tell you. You go, what? You go, I'm going to tell you something in 3 weeks. You go, you fuck it. So we're going to get into that. We're also going to talk about Hammy David Lammy at PMQs, getting in all sorts of problems, whether or not it was puppies. Probably puppies as well, given the week that Lammy's had. Poppies. Also about more sex attackers being released. He really was all over the show. And also, just a lot of people say, well, why aren't you focusing on reform? Well, Nigel Farage did a little speech earlier this week. Just cannot not be in the news, old Nige. So he's done a speech which is basically rowing back on some of the more outlandish pledges that reform have made over the last couple of years about tax and things that they'll be able to do in government. So we'll pick apart all of that. I'm talking to you from a Travelodge in Worcester, because I did a gig, and maybe this is more of a blokey thing, but for the travel nerds out there, I did a gig in Redditch last night. First up, thanks to that audience, brilliant energy for a Wednesday. And I'm in Monmouth tonight, and then I thought, I'm going to stay in the middle. So I stayed in Worcester. It's probably the nicest view I've ever had from a Travelodge. And my day started fantastically well because I'm looking right now in front of me, a pastry and some yogurt and some apples that I stole from the breakfast. It's not stole, but I want to feel like I stole it. It's a great way to start your day. I mean, it's on them, man, because they say eat all you can eat breakfast. They don't say where you have to eat that. This week as well, coming up, I'm in Alnwick on Saturday. That is getting towards sold out, and then Newcastle, which is sold out. And by the way, if you're looking at 2026 dates, just to let you know, Norwich next year, which isn't till April, has already sold out. April of next year. So get yourself on Live Nation. And a lot of the dates are sort of getting up into the 60, 70% sold thing. What I don't want is you saying, well, I didn't know about it, despite it being literally all that I talk about. Piss take prices. Okay, this really has gotten... I honestly think I could become like... the kind of the gammon Martin Lewis. So really, on all the social media platforms I posted this on, people really bought into it. I mean, some of the answers, it is incredible when something goes sort of viral that there'll be people that have to shit on it. Some people have to shit on things. There was a couple that mentioned Brexit and said, well, this is what you voted for. Okay, I get it if you want to bring up Brexit at any opportunity, but like, I don't think anybody, even the most deluded Brexiteer, have actively voted for something to happen. They might have claimed something wouldn't happen. But some people say, well, isn't this what right-wingers want? They just like, basically, they don't like me and they've just seen an opportunity to give me a kick in the balls. But it doesn't really, it's just what they're saying seems like a bit of a fucking reach. And then there's a lot of other people that would just say, well, there is one solution. Just don't pay. Just don't pay those prices. The fact that like 10 other people have said that doesn't stop them from seeming, from putting in their fucking two penny worth. I mean, a lot of these prices aren't things people have actually paid, that they're things that they've noticed. But as well, let's just be clear about the rules of piss take prices. They have to take your breath away, okay? They have to make you go, Jesus Christ, like your dad would have done back in the day. Bloody hell. You know, you got to blow out of your mouth. You've got to exhale when you hear about this. So we've got, and I'm sorry, I don't remember who mentioned this one, but £25 to park at Bristol Airport for less than an hour. That can't be right. And this is, see how I'm talking now? This is what a piss take price should make you think. Not only that, Bristol Airport, £2.50 just to use a luggage trolley. Get the fuck. I often think that the Scots have a phrase that I'm jealous of there. Get the fuck. Get the fuck, wee man. Also, by the way, honourable member to Steve Dunn, who, following on from hearing about Mark Steele, said that he takes his own gravy with him in a flask. That is, I mean, that, I would say that's borderline pathological. That's beyond Partridge, I would say. Taking your own gravy in a flask. If you get stopped by the old Bill, that is not what you want them to find out. You go, I'd rather that was crack cocaine in there. There was a guy called John who said that he had a £15 transaction fee to get out €100 in Iron Napa. And worse still for John is that his wife warned him about it. His wife warned him and she still hasn't forgiven him. It's a great thing about being married. I bet you any money. Just as John, you know, as he's in the hospice, takes his last dying breath, the family all around him, she'll probably lean in and go, £15, you prick. And this is, I've got to take the names. Although this guy, I think he had one of those weird names on X where blokes just generally don't give their names because they want to say abusive things. Not in this case, but they're normally be called like something big bad, the big bad or something, just so they can abuse you with anonymity. But anyway, one of these anonymous people said, £7.50 iced ring donut at Chessington World of Adventures. Come on, we all know, yeah, some people go, well, it's captive audience, where's it? No, no, this is the point of a piss-take price. Once you've factored in all of those factors, they are still taking the piss.
What most people think.
Okay, new patrons. Remember, with Patreon, you get the podcast early, ad-free, and with bonus content. And also, we got a new patron-exclusive benefit. I did my first one of these last week. I'm definitely going to do more. This is News in a Nutshell. And it's really annoying to me because I thought the acronym of that would be a NINA. But it's actually a NIAN. News in a Nutshell. So it'll be a 2-minute little clip where this week might be a good example. So this is going up for patrons. It will go up for everybody else about 4 p.m. today, but go up for patrons about 11:30. And it will be something that breaks later today or tomorrow. And I might just get on the old laptop and just do a little NINA. A little na-na Nina. Is that newsreader? Is she still doing it? Anyway. So, the Patreon benefits are expanded. And remember, if you are going to join, if Apple is your only way of joining, by all means, do it that way. But it's better for the creators if you do it via the website or via Android. And we've got a couple of returners here. Remember, because Apple slightly changed their method of doing stuff, some people are bumped out, but it's great to see people returning. Giles Smith, I know that you've been a patron before. You just sound like a cricket correspondent for The Telegraph. And George Bailey. I mean, you both sound like... George Bailey is the rugby guy. I bet Giles Smith and George Bailey go out for their sports desk drink once a year, and I bet they drink fucking port, and they eat so much cheese they wake up with gout. Two thank yous this week as well. Let's keep it positive, man. Two thank yous. We're going to start with... Well, it's sort of a thank you, a caveated one. So, Samir Zitouni, the guy who saves passengers during the attack on the train that was stopped going through Huntingdon, been described as nothing short of heroic. This is just what a fucking hero this guy is. You know, we talk about an age where people just don't get stuck in, where men just stand back and don't step up and be heroes. And this guy, he walked the walk. So unequivocal. What a British hero. And I say British, right? Because the guy... Like, he's been here fucking years and years. And because some people are so locked into this thing about nationality and race and immigration, which, by the way, let's just be clear, no mistake, I think immigration needs to come down loads, and I think the boat crossings should be brought down to as close to zero as is humanly possible, right? But this argument is extended to where there are some people online that can't even hear about something as wonderful as this without kind of questioning whether or not this guy's British. Give your head a wobble, seriously. And the argument that some people on the right have made, which I think is a reasonable one, is about integration. We've had high levels. Do we actually have like a shared culture anymore? This guy is doing exactly what you want, and you still, some people, I'm not saying listeners to this podcast, but some people still can't just say, what a wonderful thing, right? So I don't want to... Let's go back to the positive here. Samir Zitouni, absolute thank you and hero of the week. And an unequivocal thank you is to the John Lewis advert. The John Lewis advert. So if you haven't seen it, it's about, there's a lad in it. So the moment you see a teenage boy in an advert, you know, he kind of like, he sort of looks like he could have been in another era cast as the older version of the boy in adolescence. So you're thinking, fucking hell, where's this going? You know, there's the dad and you're thinking, oh, is this going to be another advert where dads are just stupid and clueless and teenage boys are arseholes? And basically the story of the advert. Do you know what? Watch the advert, okay? Watch the advert. I think it's a really lovely advert. And then what's funny is, and you know, I've got a bit of an obsession at the moment about how female-driven TikTok is. It's like, it's gone viral there. And there's some girls there, some women, who are so used to the kind of like the empathetic dialogue going all towards women. They're like... they're a bit confused. They're like, I don't get it. Why do people love this? Why has it gone viral? What? They're just doing the bare minimum. I'm like, okay, let me break it down as an expert in blokery, why this has gone viral. The first thing is in terms of representation of men generally in adverts, not a great period, you know what I mean? Toxic masculinity era. Dads are, as I say, generally clueless, normally falling off something or being informed about something by their smart, all-knowing wife. And in terms of teenage boys, it hasn't really been a vintage year, you know, in the kind of adolescence fucking era. So it was just nice to see, because the thing is outside of the bubble of social media, there'll be a lot of, yeah, I'm going to say it, females who have dads that they really love, brothers that they really love, uncles that they really, you know, loads of men in their life that they really love. And for them, and all men, probably, apart from the really lefty ones that pretend not to understand why this, I say lefty, that's not actually correct, is the overly woke ones that pretend not to understand why this ad works. It's just nice to see a positive portrayal, which leads me on to the second thing, is because it captures something about male communication. Men use, and this isn't a dig, ladies, well, not entirely. Men use a lot less words per day, right? When it comes to a family event, just sit there, right? And just keep a little mental note of how, who's saying what at a family event. Me and my wife did it last Christmas, and we kind of worked out that my wife and my mother-in-law were probably clocking in about anything from 10 to 20,000 words. I was probably the highest represented male, coming in, I think, about 4,000 to 6,000. And then as you went down the list, my son also represents, he's a good communicator, but there were certain family members where I think we are talking 60 words in a day. So most of them were like, yes, no, extra helping. And so I think male communication is misunderstood. And what was lovely about this is that when men express love or admiration or kinship with one another, it's expressed in it. It's a risk. Do you know what I mean? It feels like a risk. So it's done in a delicate way. It's almost heavily loaded with symbolism as well. So this lad is taking a risk. What he's really saying is, and this will give me goosebumps as I say it, apologies for being a bit wet, but he's saying, I get you, Dad. I understand. Maybe I'm getting a bit older now. Maybe I'm starting to understand how you see the world. And also what's lovely about it, and this is not an ad for John Lewis, by the way, but well done them. Because in its own way, it was quietly radical, is the dad, part of the present makes him go back to his younger days, and you think he goes through a period of maybe missing that or that he doesn't have that anymore. But then the story of the advert kind of pivots and he remembers that what he has now is far greater. So I'm probably going to have a little pause here. I think there's a bit of dust in this room. Okay, lads, don't worry about it. Sorted myself right out there. Just like Richard Dreyfuss in Jaws, I just crushed her. Or was it Richard Dreyfuss or Rob Schneider or James Schneider? Anyway, I'm a man, all right? Let's talk about some politics. Jesus, get over it. All right, so let's wind back. A week is a long time in politics, and a week is even longer for this Labour government. So we're going to go back to Rachel's, Reed's early morning horror show on Tuesday, right? So it's 8:10. It's a surprise announcement, which is new. It's the new thing that politicians do. It's like, you know, when Beyonce dropped an album out of the blue, this is what they do now. They drop an announcement. And you think, all right, is she going to kind of break with convention and tell us one of the measures in the budget? Or is she going to be specific and say, yeah, I probably am going to break rules on taxing working people or something? But no, nothing. She gave us nothing. She gave us nothing. Now, it is guaranteed to be in the news. If you do something at 8:10, you're going to be the news cycle for the whole day. But it's also, as I said earlier, the most angry people are, especially in middle age. Especially in middle age, you wake up and the first thing middle-aged people have to do is just kind of like the effort of actually returning to consciousness properly, getting past all your fear, resentment and disappointment and foreboding about the future and old age. You have to get through all of that. But before you've done any of that, you're sitting there trying to get some caffeine down your Gregory Peck, and there's Rachel Reeves telling you everything's going to get worse. I mean, what? Seriously. I understand rolling the pitch, right? So what happened? This is a wild overcorrection from when with Winterfuel, they didn't tell us about it. And then now, this is the problem with this government. They're not that smart. So they think that they're learning, but they're actually just annoying the crap out of people. So they've gone, with that, we didn't warn people enough. So now We kind of can make them miserable at the darkest bit of the year, which is heading squarely towards winter. Well, congratulations now. I will really enjoy that punch in the bollocks when it finally comes. And just the tone, as well as not saying anything, to the point where Susanna Reid and Lorraine Kelly took the piss out of her for saying nothing. And I think when Lorraine Kelly's taking the piss out of you, you've done something wrong. And then so she spoke in her speech about all the reasons why things are worse. And of course, she went back to Brexit, which she obviously only just found out about. COVID, you'd be angry too, right? If you was just only finding out about this stuff, you'd be furious. The first Boer War, Adam and Eve getting kicked out of the Garden of Eden. All of this stuff has a legacy for Rachel Reeves, and it's not her fault, right? It's not her fault. And yet, so the messaging, though, was all over the shop, because essentially she's saying this is all due to happen, stuff that's happened before, but also things which happened recently. Tariffs, but they boasted about how their deal with the US was good for UK and tariffs, but also we suffered because of tariffs. It was, oh, Jesus, honestly, on every level, this was politically fucking illiterate. And no acceptance of any responsibility for anything. Now, I'm not saying realistically that the current chancellor is going to go up and go, yeah, you know what? We did national insurance on employment just at the point AI was coming an option, and that has meant less people in work and more people are getting benefits and less chances for young people. Yeah, we also fucked the messaging on the economy when we got in. We did have those welfare changes, but despite being a government that boasts about the size of its majority, we also are totally terrified of our backbenchers. I stand by it. Maybe I'm just deluded and maybe I just want to hear them say it. But if they were to just go, yes, there are structural problems we've inherited which are making things worse, but also it is important in life to take responsibility and there are things that we could have done which we could have done better. Do you know how much of a sigh that would let out in the British public where you go, wow, was that the sweet sound of a politician taking actual fucking responsibility for something that's happened? And also acknowledging, I realised that last year when I said I was getting confused with the SNP that said the referendum there would be once in a generation. They really meant, once every 10 years. But no, she said it'd be once in a parliament, this budget. And I sort of think that is starting to look like, when someone says that what they're going to do is definitely, this is definitely the last time, babe, that I'm going to ask you for a lift to the station.
What most people think.
And I just don't know if they're keeping up as well as they should be with how the impact of messaging is changing. They're very fixated on, the apocryphal tale of the letter from Liam Byrne that was left for the coalition government and how George Osborne and David Cameron rolled the pitch for years for austerity. They still, for some reason, maybe they've just got this kind of generational trauma for how well that worked, and they just think they can do that now. And I don't think it works now. I mean, Jesus Christ, mentioning Liz Truss, I do think that there are a lot of people that are still, the polling tells you this, there's a lot of people still furious about what the Tories did with the economy and on immigration. But mentioning Liz Truss, given how fast the news cycle goes now, mentioning Liz Truss and Kwasi Kwarteng, it's a bit sort of like mentioning the ice bucket challenge, isn't it? And fucking fidget spinners. I just think Liz Truss was, let's not forget, Prime Minister for 44 long days. and you might want to bring up the fact that she's a fucking lettuce or whatever, but Rachel Reeves is more like, because, lettuce, at least it goes off quickly and you get rid of it. I would say Rachel Reeves is more like a kind of mouldy old soup at the back of the fridge that's just slowly contaminating everything in the fridge quietly. I don't know. I'd love to see some polling that suggests whether or not that still has an impact there. And I would say that, Kemi Badenoch probably had the best response to this. She called what Rachel Reeves had said a waffle bomb. I don't know who she's got right in for her, man. I might tap them up. A waffle bomb is just the perfect description of that, because this is, it's a breakfast reference. Genius. And it also just reminds people, if anything, I would say if you had one criticism of waffle bomb is that it is not it doesn't sum up the fury that it engendered. It's almost too gentle in a way. But I think it was funny, and it was nice to have something funny after a Tuesday, which was started by somebody telling us something awful was going to happen. And so basically saying, just, you know, if you feel a bit clenched at the moment, if you're a bit worried about money, just clench a bit harder. And the truth is, if they come out on budget day and it's less shit than I thought, I'll still hold them accountable for the fucking hernia that I had in the meantime. Bit on reform, bit on Nigel. So Nigel is trying to sound more sensible on the economy. And I do wonder, you know, so they're rowing back on some of their pledges. Did they row back on the 2-child cap thing? I do wonder why they're saying anything at this point in time. Because reform, as I've said before, the word is just a great sentiment for this age. What do we need? Reform. You know, even if you weren't saying we need the party, you would definitely concur with the sentiment that we need reform. And Labour, I mean, Labour, at the end of the day, got in government without committing to anything. So I'm not saying that they should go as far as Labour's Ming Vars strategy and say basically fuck all throughout the entire election campaign. But you could probably just sit back. I mean, it's a bit like the PMQs thing where Farage has said he's going to sit up in the gallery because he's not getting called for PMQs. You go, well, particularly with this week, which we'll get on to, why would you want to sort of interrupt your enemy while they're making a mistake? And also, it turns out, dramatic Nige, is that he was actually told that his next PMQ question will be November the 12th. But he loves being in the news, all right? This is the guy that's career was revived by eating crocodile bollocks in a jungle, all right? So one of the things that he talks about is cutting the minimum wage for young people. And that is, it's interesting that, because that is just a very Tory thing to do, isn't it? There is a pragmatic basis for this where you say it's gone up quite dramatically, you know, to the point where a lot of people who have more experience are getting paid a lot less because companies and organisations are having to fund relatively high starter wages. Now, that's not me saying that young people aren't kind of fucked and the housing market isn't fucked and stuff like that. But there's definitely, if you look at the graph on minimum wage, it's gone up dramatically. But that's a very Tory thing to say. And you do wonder how, you know, if they do have a burgeoning young vote, how that'll play out in a red wall sounding that Tory. But one of the things that really hit the headlines was that he predicted basically a sovereign wealth crisis. And I think that there's some basis for this. He was saying that, you know, the way things are going, the government borrowing will go up, there's going to be a general election 2027. And I don't know. I think that's a very modern right-wing thing to do, isn't it? That's very, to very definitively predict a dystopian outcome for the UK. London's finished, bro. London's cooked. The UK's finished. We're all going to be speaking Gujarati by 2045. You know, that is a thing that the modern right do because it get, you know, it's born off the social media space. Where if you say something definitively, like if I was to go on social media right now and to say, if I just tweeted this Labour government will lose heavily in 2029 and will never govern again, that would get more likes than any joke I could do because that's how that space kind of works, right? But they will face more scrutiny, and maybe he's just being smart, Nigel, is that he sees that some of their councils that got in basically saying that they could save 80 billion quid by just not putting up pride flags. It's that, you know, some of them are going to have to raise council tax. Some of them are going to have to raise them by among the highest in the country. So it's kind of interesting, I suppose. Maybe this is Farage looking at their polling with suspicion and going, really, we're not going to win a majority unless we can tempt, you know, some, basically people like me, the sound money Tories, the people like me where I have, you know, some interest in the culture war. You know, I have concerns about immigration, but I'm also principally have always been more economically right wing. So is that his game? Or, you know, classic Nigel, just loves being in the news. All right, after that little detour to the Reform Party, let's get back to Labour. Hammy David Lammy at PMQs. Unbelievable. Best thing I've seen in ages, PMQs on Wednesday. I mean, everyone let themselves down to varying degrees. And I would say about this, PMQs has long been, especially after the election and with Kemi in, people say, well, what is the point? It's pointless. Nothing is happening there. And then bit by bit lately, and partly with Kemi performing better, you know, with their kind of stings on Rayner and on Mandelson, it started creating the political weather. So in a general sense, you know, the Tories have been doing better. Their polling has improved a bit. I don't know if that is, you know, PMQs has that sort of power, but it's kind of must-see television. the first thing let's deal with is with the Poppy thing. So David Lammy, he's standing in his first, I think his first ever PMQs. Very grandiose, this man. Very grandiose. And he stands up and, of course, with just so much grandiosity, says that we got to remember, you know, it's Remembrance Day, and he really lays it on thick. But here's the thing. Is he hasn't got a poppy on. Now, personally, I do think the poppy thing has got a bit out of hand. I love the Armed Forces, you know what I mean? Nothing but love and respect for them. But I also remember a time when, you know, it was, we wore them a few days before and a few days afterwards. Now we sort of wear them from, I think, the summer solstice onwards. But maybe, you know, a government minister should have a poppy on at this time of year. So the thing is, Labour, right? Somebody somewhere has gone, fuck me, David hasn't got a poppy on, right? So they're scrabbling about to get him a poppy. So the one that they get is off an actual MP who is an actual veteran, right? Just think about the optics of this. It's so bad. Taking a poppy off a veteran. And so the poppy he wears is actually a regimental poppy, which he doesn't have the right to wear. And then someone has obviously said to him, you've got to cover this off. People are talking about it on social media. So then Lammy goes, this information is so out of left field, by the way. But this is so clearly designed to cover his arse. He says, I'm proud to be doing this. By the way, I got a new suit because I knew my godmother would be watching, so I got a new suit. So it's kind of subtly saying, oh, hence why I wasn't wearing the poppy. I mean, Jesus, can you sink any fucking lower than when you've messed up is to blame your godmother?
What must people think?
So let's go to the actual questions, right? The Tory guy, I'm going to call him the Tory guy, Cartledge. David Carr, I mean, God, if that guy ever becomes a senior figure in British politics, the headline writers are going to love it, aren't they? He's torn his cartilage. Cartilage gone. Cartilage needs replacing. Oh, that'd be a lot of fun. Anyway, so this Tory guy gets up. He's got an interesting aesthetic about him, let's put it that way. But he's got a very calm style about him, old Cartilage. And he starts off by riling Lammy with a couple of questions about an apology for the release of the Epping Forest asylum-seeking sex attacker, as I'm calling him. So it's kind of like the dark arts, right? Lammy had already apologised. Lammy's ticking, you know, and he apologises again, but the Tory guy sort of acts like he hasn't. So, but anyway, it achieves the effect that Lammy is ticking. And then he asks a seemingly innocuous question about the further incorrect release of sex attackers. First one, you're going, okay, well, all right, maybe it's just a general thread that they're starting here. But then he asks it again and again, and you're thinking, oh my God, the Tories are looking so happy sitting around him. They literally look like they've just got, some insider trading on to short natural gas or something. And then Lammy starts getting riled at this because it's probably, I mean, the thing about, I guess, PMQs is you want some sense that you can anticipate the next question, right? The problem is if you keep getting asked the same one, I think that Badenoch could have done this more with Starmer at times, is that you do run out of things to say and you've got to kind of say the same thing differently. So he starts getting riled. At one point, it's nothing quite like seeing somebody saying, get a grip, man, whilst you're losing your grip, David. You were losing your grip as you said that. And I think if anyone's ever been in a domestic row, and I would say this applies predominantly to rows with women, but not exclusively. But if the moment somebody starts shouting and bringing up the past, as Lammy did, you kind of won. So you just got to stay in the pocket, stay in the zone. You've kind of won. I mean, Lammy then, he's going off about, we're not going to take any lectures, as is Labour's current refrain. We're not taking any lectures from these guys. Look, you know what? You're doing stuff so badly. Let me know who you will take lectures from. Economics experts, people who know how to grow the economy. Because, all right, you won't take it from the Tories, but a couple of lectures here and there might be well-appointed. So you're kind of thinking eventually the Tories have got a rabbit that they just can't wait to pull out of this hat. And then it gets to the end. Lammy's had yet another rant. This guy, his blood pressure at that point, I would love to just, maybe they need to make PMQs more interesting is they need to have live heart rate and blood pressure monitors on the MPs. Because then you could like flip back to a Soccer Saturday type analysis. Kind of go, oh, look at David Lammy there. His blood pressure absolutely spiking. The heart rate is up. Completely lost his focus there. But the Tory guy, he's ready. He must have been ready for what was his sixth question, which was to reveal that indeed another sex attacker had been released incorrectly. But here's the problem. They'd already done their six questions, right? So he gets up and then I think the speaker actually allows him. He's like, David Cartledge. And then, no, No, you're done, mate. You've done your six. You've done your six. And it kind of like, I don't know if you remember, it was an iconic open goal miss. It was Ronnie Rosenthal for Liverpool against Aston Villa. Why can I remember this shit and not fucking like, you know, family birthdays? Ronnie Rosenthal, he rounded the keeper for Liverpool at Villa Park and he just casually went to stroke the ball into an open goal, but it hit the bar. And I've never seen so many wanker gestures like go up in a second behind the goal. And then they're scrabbling around the Tories because they've done exactly what they're supposed to do. This is a beautifully executed piece of theatre. I mean, one, is it the best optics to seem this happy when in the heart of it is a sex attacker being released? Fine. But it's politics, you know, as a piece of strategy, it worked up till that point, right? And so they scrabble around trying to get in a supplementary point of order question about Lammy misleading the House. Well, he sort of didn't, but only in the kind of sneakiest, fucking slyest way possible. And here's the thing, it turns out Lammy knew. So why didn't he say, or why didn't he give an announcement at the beginning of PMQs? It's totally bizarre, the whole thing. I think what happened was they riled Lammy with the first two things about the apology. And then Lammy got into a bad headspace where he's like, well, I know what you want. I'm not giving this here. I'm not giving it to you. But literally cutting off his nose to spite his face in public. So the whole thing is completely brilliantly entertaining, but unedifying spectacle, which again, I'll make the point about Nigel Farage. You do not need to be involved with this, mate. You do not need to be involved. And for David Lammy, to lose his rag like this in the week that a French cab driver had accused him of slapping him. Now, by the way, I've read this French cab driver's account. When I read it, I thought some of it seemed laid on a little bit thick, seemed a bit implausible. But having seen David Lammy yesterday, you go, right, well, that's back in play as being something that might well have happened, you know? And also David Lammy in this thing about the French cabbie, it's worth reading the report. It's kind of funny because it's just so scuzzy. But they said that David Lammy said, fuck the French, which may be, you know, the only thing that increases his popularity rating in Britain this week. But yeah, just PMQs. Keep your eye on it, man, because stuff is happening there. I don't, you know, the Tories kind of fumbled it at the try line this week, but they've definitely got people there that are thinking ahead and setting traps. I guess, you know, the main thing they need to do is make sure that when the animal is in the trap, that they pull the trigger. Okay, that is the end of this breaking news episode. And remember, just do me a favour. I know I still have a lot of casual listeners. I want you to listen more often. Really, I'm working harder on this podcast. We've got new items like piss take prices and stuff like that. So if you could go to wherever you get your podcast and look in the top, usually in the top right corner, there'll be something that says subscribe or sometimes follow this podcast. They word it in different ways, but just having more regular subscribe listeners pushes me up the list and it helps everything. As do reviews. Leave good reviews, please, wherever you can. The ones on Apple Podcasts, I'm finally not saying iTunes. Some 4 years after it stopped being a thing. We had a few couple of, if you leave the 5-star ones, I will read them out sometimes in a funny voice. This one's from Mara Mara. Is that like Mara? Me old mate? God, that's an old word, isn't it? Mara. Another fabulous podcast from the funniest ex-teacher who turned a comedy to increase his bank balance. He's worked hard to get where he is, and it shows with his well-thought-out political observations. And I feel the show's title would be pretty close to accurate if there was a poll. Keep up the good work, Jeff. You are beautiful. That's slightly out of character with the last one there. This one is from Claire WP. Claire sounds like maybe she's very posh, Claire. I love this podcast. I don't agree with everything, but Jeff always makes me laugh, and he has a great selection of guests. Yeah, that was a posh word to use, selection of guests from across the political spectrum. Plus, big plus, Jeff doesn't take himself too seriously. Yeah, I've always kind of thought that, but every time I do a video on social media, people take me absolutely literally. The video about Aldershot, by the way, is fucking going viral again, but I don't care. Aldershot, I've done my tour show now. Fuck you, Aldershot. That's my kind of version of Anchorman. Fuck you, San Diego. There, but listen, I'll be back with another guest next week. I'm going to try and keep it to main show Tuesdays, breaking news Thursday or Friday morning, because it does seem from the numbers that, well, you guys, you're of that age where, put it this way, things need to be regular.